Hello, my name is Rob Bennett. I'm the author of a book entitled Passion Saving, The Path to Plentiful Free Time and Soul-Satisfying Work. I'm also the publisher of the PassionSaving.com website, and I'm working on a second book entitled Investing for Humans, How to Get What Works on Paper to Work in Real Life. This is the 19th podcast I've recorded. I'm recording it in October of 2008. And the title is PE10 Rocks. I advocate an approach to investing that I call rational investing. And rational investing is a model that rejects the dominant model of understanding how stock investing works of today. The dominant model is passive investing. The difference is that passive investors, the thing they are passive about is their stock allocation. Passive investors believe that it is not possible to know when to increase their stock allocations and when to lower their stock allocations. Basically, they believe that they basically follow something called the efficient market theory, which tells us, the efficient market theory has been discredited, but it tells us, for those who believe in it, that the market price is always, in some sense, the right price, that the market assigns prices to stocks in an effective, efficient way. And I reject that idea. In total, I believe that the market sometimes, of course, assigns prices properly, but at other times, the market prices stocks wildly on the high side. And at other times, the market prices stocks wildly on the low side. So I would not trust the market to set prices even a tiny little bit. I believe what the investor has to do is look at prices, determine whether they are reasonable or rational or not. And when they are reasonable and rational, the investor should be going with a high stock allocation. And when prices are poor, when prices are out of control on the high side, the investor should be lowering his or her stock allocation. So that's the primary difference between passive investing, the model you hear about when you see magazines and newspapers and websites answering questions about how to invest in stocks. That's 90% of what you hear is influenced by the passive investing model today. And rational investing, which is a contrary model. Rational investing has really been around since the beginning of time. I did not invent the idea. I came up with the name rational investing to refer to it just as a way of talking about an approach to investing that has become unpopular today when because prices have grown so irrational. The more irrational prices are, the less popular rational investing is. The more irrational stock prices are, the more popular passive investing is. Now, the idea with rational investing is to purchase stocks the way you purchase everything else. What you want to do is determine the value, the long-term value proposition of the stocks you buy. And obviously, you want to buy more stocks when the long-term value proposition is high. And you want to go with a lower stock allocation when the long-term value proposition is low. In order to do that, you need a tool to tell you when the long-term value proposition is good and when the long-term value proposition is not good. So that's why we turn to the PE10 concept. And the P in PE10 stands for price. The E stands for earnings. So in order to explain PE10, I should probably first describe PE1, which is the far more common valuation metric. PE10 is rarely used. It's really only used by people who care about valuations and who know the importance of understanding valuations when purchasing stocks, and those are primarily rational investors of one type or another. Passive investors do not really care about valuations. You may sometimes see them refer to it, but if you're a passive investor, the thing you're passive about is your stock allocation. That means you're just going to stick with that same old stock allocation no matter what. Well, if you're going to stick with it, there's really not much purpose in knowing what the valuation level is there? It's all sort of a moot exercise for a passive investor. So passive investors tend to not care much, and as a result, they tend not to study valuations, and they tend not to know how to calculate valuations properly. As a result, we live in a time when passive investing is very popular. We live in a time when most investors don't really care to get valuations right. And thus, we live in a time when PE1, which is an inferior valuation metric, is the one you hear about all the time, instead of PE10, which is the superior valuation metric. So I'll describe PE1 and then describe how PE10 is different. PE1 is the one you hear about all the time. That's the price earnings ratio. So if you've read anything on stock investing, you've probably heard reference to the price earnings ratio. Something I advise strongly when learning about investing. Many people, most of the people that I Twitch these podcasts are directed are, I direct these to the typical middle class investors. My advice is not aimed at the super sophisticated investors. There are better ways to invest than the ideas I put forward, but there are other websites serving those people. I aim my advice at the typical person, the person who's putting money aside to fund his or her retirement, who wants to obtain a good return, but who does not want to take on high levels of risk and does not want to take on a big job. They don't want a second job of studying investing every weekend and every night after work. And the primary person, the primary big name expert who directs his energies to helping those people is John Bogle. John Bogle, I believe, created a revolution in middle class investing with his indexing concept that he came out with back in the late 1970s. And John Bogle's really the guy who the average middle-class investor turns to for investing advice. Buffett is the other name that is very well known, and Buffett's advice is fantastic. But Buffett is more for the sophisticated investor, the person who's willing to study investing on the weekends. And if you're that type of investor, value investing, which is the Buffett approach, is the way to go. But if you are the typical middle-class investor, indexing is probably a better approach. And so that's what I advocate at my website, and that's what I talk about in these podcasts. I advocate indexing strategies. The difference between me and Bogle is that Bogle's sort of a half and half. Half rational investor, half passive investor. Much of his advice is wonderful, the rational investing half. And Bogle is truly a rational investor in much of the advice he offers. But Bogle is also a big-time advocate of passive investing, which is purely emotional. I've never heard any rational argument for why people should not adjust their stock allocations when prices get out of control. And I've spoken with tens of thousands of middle-class investors, many of them advocates of passive investing, some of them dogmatic advocates of passive investing, and I have never heard anyone offer what I would call a rational explanation of why they think it's a bad idea to change your stock allocation when prices get out of control. But that is the passive investing model, and Bogle does advocate that model. There's no question about it. Bogle is the lead advocate of passive investing. But so what I do in my work is take the Bogle model, which is 50 to 60% rational investing, and then X out the passive investing portion and replace that with what the historical stock return data tells us about how stock investing works, which I view as an objective source of rational information, an objective source of information on how to invest rationally. So if you invest rationally, you're not going to stick with the same stock allocation at all times. That's out. That's the first thing. That's the thing that distinguishes you from a passive investor. So the logical follow-up question is, if I'm going to change my stock allocation, how do I know when to do that? And of course, the passive investors will tell you, you can't know. There is no way to know. That's really where they start from. And if I'm going to say there is a way to know, I have to provide you a tool for how to do it. And that tool is the PE10 tool. So first, let's describe what PE is, which is the price-earnings ratio. PE1 is the tool that most people writing about investing will refer to when talking about valuations. It's a flawed tool, but you need to at least understand what it is in order to understand why PE10 is superior. So when people refer to something like the price-earnings ratio, I, based on my conversations with thousands and thousands of middle-class investors, I am of the firm belief that what is needed today in the investing field is intelligent, simple explanations of the fundamentals of investing. That's what's lacking today. There's lots of places you can go to and get sophisticated advice or advice about all sorts of details. And that market's been filled, but this is very paradoxical reality. You would think that the basics would be covered well, and maybe we would have to work our way up to the more advanced stuff. But it's the other way around. There's tons and tons of material on the advanced stuff, but the basics have been ignored, or when they are addressed, they are almost always handled poorly. The basics are almost always handled by advocates of the passive investing school. And so the result is people get the basics wrong, and whether they get the advanced stuff right or not, they're in trouble, because if you get the basics wrong, there's no way your investing strategy is going to work in the long term. So what I urge you to do is spend your energies, follow an 80-20 rule. Put 80% of your energies into learning the basics. And don't worry so much about the advanced stuff, the details. If you get the basics right, you're going to be okay. That's what's going to determine whether you are successful or not. And these little details, it's good to get those right, but it's not a life or death matter. So when you see something like the price-earnings ratio discussed, the price-earnings ratio is very, very important, because the big thing that you control as a stock investor, obviously you don't control how stocks do on a day-to-day basis. It's beyond you. And if you read media accounts, all they talk about is the day-to-day movements. What's the bailout going to do? And what are interest rates going to do? How's that going to affect stock prices? And I just think it's a big waste of time, because you can't control how stocks respond to these events. You can't predict the events in the first place. But even if you could, you can't control how the market's going to respond. So I would just ignore it all. Treat it as noise. And I'm very much in tune with Bogle on that advice. Treat it as noise. It's pointless. But there is something you can control, and that is your stock allocation. So the single most important thing to your success as an investor is determining whether you have the right stock allocation at any given time. That's just critical. And that's where I think passive investing drops the ball. The passive investing advocates say ignore your allocation. They don't say ignore it. They say to set it. They do advocate that you spend time thinking about it when you set it. But once you set it, they just say leave it in place. Ignore the effect of valuations on your allocation decisions. And that is madness in my mind. So when you see a discussion of the price-earnings ratio, you need to stop and think, what is that? What is the price-earnings ratio? It's sort of like when you're reading a book and you come across a word that you haven't seen before. You have a choice of just sort of going on and not knowing the meaning of the word, or stopping and looking it up in a dictionary. And it often pays to stop and look it up, because you'll understand the passage much better if you understand why the writer chose that particular word. Well, if you don't really know what the price-earnings ratio is, you should stop and think it through. So if you do know, please, I ask for your patience, but I want to go through this slowly so that those who have never thought about it much have a chance to sort of slowly think about what the price-earnings ratio is, what it means, what it signifies. The P in PE1 is price, and the E is earnings. The price-earnings ratio is the price of a stock or of an index. And I'll always be talking, in most of the work I do, I talk about stock indexes rather than individual stocks. But the price-earnings ratio certainly applies in either context. When we talk about the price-earnings ratio for the S&P index, a broad index of U.S. stocks, we are talking about the price of the index, which is what you would pay for a share of the S&P, and we are comparing it to the earnings of the S&P index, and the E stands for the earnings of the index in the last year. So you're looking at the price. Let's say the price to buy a share in the S&P index is, just to pick a number out of the air, let's say it's $100. So the price is $100. And let's say the earnings for the past year is $10. So your price-earnings ratio would be 100 over 10. And obviously that's a price-earnings ratio of 10 to 1. It's a price-earnings ratio of 10. What does that signify? What it tells you is, the way to think about this is, say you're at the grocery store and you're going to buy peanut butter for your family. And there's two jars of peanut butter to choose from. And one, the price is $2.67. And the other one, the price is $3.50. Well, on a very simple level, you might say $2.67 is a better deal because you're getting peanut butter, which is what you want with both purchases. But the one that sells for $2.67, you're obviously paying a smaller price than the one that where the price is $3.50. So $2.67 might sound like the better deal. But of course, that's not necessarily the case. It might be that the peanut butter that is selling at the higher price that jar may contain more peanut butter. So while you're paying a higher price, it may be worth a higher price. You may be getting more of the product you're trying to buy. So it's worth $3.50. It's a better deal at $3.50 than the $2.67 jar of peanut butter. Well, how do you compare the two? How do you decide which is the better deal? The way they do it at the grocery stores is a lot of grocery stores I've been at, they will mark on the product what the unit price is. And what they're doing there is they're saying, they don't just tell you the overall price, $2.67 versus $3.50. They tell you how much you pay per ounce of peanut butter. So it might be that the $3.50 jar, you're paying a lower price per ounce. And so that's actually the better deal than the jar of peanut butter selling for $2.67. That's what you're trying to do when you calculate the price-earnings ratio. When you buy the S&P index, what is it you're trying to buy? You're not buying peanut butter, obviously. You're not trying to buy food that satisfies your nutritional needs. What you're buying, what you're trying to buy, what you want to buy, is an income stream. You're buying a share of, when you buy a stock, you're buying a share of ownership in that company. When you buy an index fund, a broad index fund, you're buying a share of the productivity of the entire U.S. economy. That's really what you're buying. And the reason you're buying it is you want to have money coming in every year into your life. Money that you don't have to work. Most times when you have money coming in, you have to go to work. But when you invest, it's your money working for you. Your money produces the income stream, not your physical labor. That's the great thing about investing. So what you're buying is an income stream. Well, the income stream is the earnings. If the company or the index you are invested in is producing $10 of earnings every year, well, that's a nice thing for you to have. You have $10 coming in every year that you didn't have to work for. You didn't have to go out and slave away at a job 8 hours a day to have that $10 coming in. So what you're buying when you buy the S&P index is an income stream. You're buying that $10 of earnings. We're using imaginary numbers here. Now, is it a good thing to buy $10 of earnings? Or is it a bad thing to buy $10 of earnings? There's no way to know unless you know how much you're paying, how the price compares. Just as there's no way to know when buying a jar of peanut butter, whether it's a good buy or not, unless you know what your options are. How much you'd be paying per ounce of peanut butter if you purchased from a different store or if you purchased a different brand. That's why we use the price-earnings ratio. In our imaginary example, the price of the index was $100, and the income stream was $10. The earnings were $10 per year. So what you're doing is you're turning over to somebody $100, money that's in your pocket, you're turning over $100, and in return, you're getting an income stream of $10 per year. Every year, there's going to be $10 of earnings coming into you, which the S&P index is producing, and which is going to be turned over to you because of your ownership of that share in the index. Well, is that a good deal or a bad deal? In this case, I'd say it's a very good deal. You're paying $100, which is 10 times the annual income stream. Your price earnings ratio is 10 to 1 or 10. So you're paying $10, you're paying $100, and you're getting $10 in each year. The reason why that's such a great deal is if you hold that investment for only 10 years, you're going to have brought in $10 each year for each year over 10 years. 10 times 10 is 100. In 10 years, you're going to have recovered your entire investment. And every year after that is just gravy. Every year that is pure profit. So that's a fantastic deal. If you can get all your money back in 10 years, that's a great investment. So a price earnings ratio of 10 is fantastic. Now compare that to a price earnings ratio of 30. That's a high price earnings ratio. What that means is you'd be paying $300 for an income stream of $10 per year. The trouble with that is it would take you 30 years to bring in enough money to cover your initial bet, to cover the amount you paid for that income stream. A lot of things can happen in 30 years. And, you know, the whole downside of investing your money is the risk you're taking on. Well, when you only have to wait 10 years to get all your money back, the risk is fairly minimal. There's risk. Anytime you give up control of your money, there's risk. But if you're going to get the entire investment paid back in 10 years, the probabilities are on your side. But if it's going to take 30 years, you're now going pretty far out into the future. The value proposition there is a little more doubtful. So a price-earning ratio of 30 is a poor price-earnings ratio. All right. Now, whenever you hear the price-earnings ratio referred to, you should check. Are they talking about PE1, which is the way it's usually done, or are they talking about PE10, which is the more effective way to calculate the price-earnings ratio? 9 times out of 10, it's going to be PE1. There are more people becoming informed about how valuations work all the time. And so nowadays, you will hear references from time to time, and if you check, you'll see that they're really using PE10, not PE1. That's a very encouraging sign for the future. But usually, 9 times out of 10, you're going to find they're referring to PE1. So you need to know the difference. You need to know why PE1 does not work. And it's the failure of PE1 as a valuation metric that has caused so much of the problems in investing today. I talk over and over and over again about how passive investing hurts you. Passive investing is madness. Passive investing is an emotional approach. The big reason why so many smart people have bought into the passive investing concept is a lot of smart people still use PE1 as their valuation metric. And PE1 is a flawed valuation metric. It does work sometimes. I've seen analyses where someone uses PE1 and it tells them something important. But PE1 is a highly unreliable valuation metric. And so what a lot of smart people have concluded is PE1 it isn't reliable. It often doesn't work. Therefore, there's no way to determine. There's no way to predict stock returns. If PE1 doesn't work, they just throw their hands up and they give up and they say, I can't predict stock returns. I can't really tell what the long-term value proposition is. I guess it's always the same. I guess, you know, I'll just have to take my chances. And so what those people do is they determine what the value proposition is on average. What they do is they say, well, how have stocks performed on average over 138 years? That's the length of time for which we have historical data. And on average, stocks perform very well. So they have concluded that you should always be heavily invested in stocks. That's the passive investing model. That's what most people are doing. The error that they are making is in using the average performance of stocks instead of understanding that the long-term value proposition of stocks changes with changes in valuation levels. There is no one value proposition that stocks offer. At high prices, stocks offer a poor long-term value proposition. At low prices, stocks offer an incredibly great long-term value proposition. And at fair price, at moderate price, stocks offer a very, very strong long-term value proposition. So at most times, the passive investing model will actually work, because at most times, the value proposition is strong enough that going with a high stock allocation is going to work. The trouble is, the value proposition is so poor at times of high stock prices that in all likelihood, you will lose most of the gains you accumulated during all those years when prices were at fair value or at less than fair value. At those rare occasions when prices, when the PE 10 level goes above 20, investors suffer bone-crushing losses. They suffer a wipeout of the accumulated wealth of a lifetime. We've been above 20 three times in U.S. history. And on those three occasions, the average price drop is 68%. We're now going through the fourth time. And we seem to be well on the way to experiencing a similar loss this time. Investing in stocks at times of super high prices is not a smart idea. But that's where you end up if you follow the passive investing model. So you do well for all those times when prices are low or moderate, and then you give back most of your gains when prices get out of control, because the passive investor is a blind investor, an investor who doesn't look at valuations, an investor who does not make reasoned changes in his stock allocation and is therefore unprepared. When stocks perform just as they've always performed in the past, and what you'll hear from passive investors when the bottom falls out is, oh, what a surprise, whoever thought, you know, stocks have changed, whoever expected this? Any informed investor would have expected it, because this is how stocks have always performed. But the trouble is that our emotions get caught up in investing. It's a very emotional endeavor, and humans are capable, when they get highly emotional, of sort of blocking out all of the information they don't want to hear. And so what happens is, once you get involved in the passive investing model, it gets harder and harder and harder to look at stock investing realistically. And if you don't look at it realistically, you're going to get in trouble sooner or later. You're asking for trouble. So we need a tool to tell us the long-term value proposition of stocks. The price earnings ratio is a logical way to go. It's essentially the unit price of things we, you know, if we purchase peanut butter, we use a unit price. We want to do the same thing when purchasing stocks, and that's what the price earnings ratio gives us. It tells us the unit price so that we can compare. We can say, is this a good price earnings ratio or a poor price earnings ratio? If I wait a few years, am I likely to get a better deal? Or do I have to buy stocks now? Do I have no choice? You know, what sort of price earnings ratio am I looking at? But the big flaw, the big thing that is holding so many people back from understanding how to invest rationally, is that most people today use PE1, which is a flawed tool, when they should be using PE10, which is a highly effective valuation metric. PE10 has been recommended by some of the smartest people in the field. I use PE10 because the work I do at my website is rooted in the research of John Walter Russell, and please check out John's site. John's site is early-retirement-planning-insights.com. John has researched the various valuation metrics and used statistical tools to determine which metrics work best, and he has found that PE10 works best for most purposes. There are some purposes in which some other valuation metrics might work a little better, and there certainly are cases that can be made for other valuation metrics, but PE10 seems to be the best one on an overall basis. So that's what I use in the work that I do in this area. John got the idea of exploring PE10 from reading the work of Robert Shiller. Robert Shiller is a Yale professor, and Robert Shiller is the author of the book Irrational Exuberance. And if you look in Irrational Exuberance, you will see that Shiller uses PE10 to analyze stocks. And he explains in the book why he uses PE10 instead of PE1. Robert Shiller, in turn, was influenced by Benjamin Graham. Benjamin Graham is the author of a book entitled Security Analysis, which came out in the 1930s. And that book is universally recognized as a classic in the field. It's sort of the Bible of how to learn about stock investing. And Benjamin Graham is the primary influence on Walter Buffett. So PE10 has a long history, and it has a history of being endorsed by the smartest people in the field. Why is it then that PE10 is the better valuation metric than PE1? Here's the reason. What you're trying to determine is what sort of, whether the income stream you're buying from stocks is big enough to justify the price you're paying. The trouble with using PE1 is you often get a false sense of what the income stream really is. And the reason is earnings of corporate enterprises are not stable. In economic good times, earnings tend to be artificially high for a few years. So say that your business is selling cars. When the economy is booming, you have lots and lots of customers, your earnings get pumped up higher than what they would ordinarily be. And of course, economic bad times, it's just the opposite. So that bottom number, the E number, the earnings number, if all you do to determine your valuation metric is compare the price of stocks to the annual earnings, you're often going to have an artificially high earnings number. And when you have an artificially high earnings number, the PE10 number will be artificially low. In other words, if we have a good year in the economy and you look at the PE1 number, you may be falsely reassured that valuations are not out of control. You may end up with a price-earnings ratio that doesn't sound too bad. But while the price-earnings ratio doesn't sound bad, valuations are actually horrible, and the long-term value proposition of stocks is horrible. So you don't want to be putting too much reliance on the PE1 number. PE10, what you do when you have PE10 is instead of comparing the price that you pay with the earnings for the last year of the index, or the earnings for the last year of the company if you're doing it for an individual stock, is you take 10 years of earnings and you average them. So what you're doing is you're smoothing out the economic distortions, the distortions that would exist because of the ups and downs of the economic cycle. When you use PE10, you smooth out that distortion and you get a real sense of what your income stream is likely to be, a number that actually is more in accord with reality. And of course, when you do that, what happens is if you're using PE10 to predict what sort of long-term value proposition you get from stocks, if you use PE1, it'll sometimes work. Sometimes the predictions come through, but sometimes they fail. So then if you measure statistically, is it possible to predict long-term stock prices, you might come to the conclusion, well, it's not really possible. It doesn't really seem to work. It's not reliable. If you use PE10, it does work. If you use PE10, where you're calculating the income stream properly, where you're smoothing it out for economic distortions, your predictions will work. You still can't predict stocks in the short term because that's not determined by economic factors. Short-term prices are determined by emotion. So PE10 won't tell you how stocks are going to do over the next year or the next 2 years or the next 3 years. But if you're talking about how they'll do over the next 5 years, PE10 can give you an idea. And if you're talking about how stocks will do over the next 10 years, PE10 will give you a statistically valid numbers. You can calculate the most likely return of stocks in 10 years. And you can calculate the range of possible returns. And you can assign probabilities to all the various points along the range. You can do all sorts of wonderful things to help you determine when to increase your stock allocation, when to lower your stock allocation, with use of this PE10 tool. So PE10 is critical for the rational investor. The whole idea of rational investing is to not invest blindly as the passive investor does. The idea of rational investing is to determine when the value proposition is strong, when the value proposition is weak, and then to lower your stock allocation when the value proposition is low, is poor, and to increase your stock allocation when the long-term value proposition is strong. That's the whole idea. And that one change, that decision not to be passive, but to be active, to change your allocation, and you don't need to make many changes. One change every 7 or 8 years is plenty on average. But if you make those changes, what you will see is you will avoid the worst times of owning stocks, the times of bone-crushing losses. You will be going with a low stock allocation and you'll suffer a little bit of a hit, but it won't be a, you know, it won't be a takeout hit. It won't be a hit that really crushes you. And then you'll be heavily invested in stocks at times when returns are just out of this world. And combine those two factors, missing out on the times when prices are going down hard while participating heavily when prices are going up fast. And what you get are, you know, significantly higher returns than what are earned by passive investors. And then on top of it, of course, you get years of compounding. Once you get higher returns earlier in life, well, those returns compound. So that if you look at how you do, say, over a 30-year time period, it's just amazing how much better you can do following the rational model as opposed to the passive model. And if you want to check that out, please go to my website, look at a calculator called the Investor Scenario Surfer, and that allows you to plug in allocations for each year of a 30-year time span, and then to look at the end of 30 years and compare how you'll do following a valuation-informed indexing approach with the passive indexing approach, and you'll almost always do better, and often you'll do better by huge amounts of money. And if you just want to look on a more elementary, simple basis, look at the stock return predictor. That will tell you what is the most likely return on stocks in 10 years, and what the range of possibilities is, and what the probabilities are for different points on that range. And you can also see what the likely return is in 20 years or 30 years or even up to 60 years. So, and all of these calculators are driven by PE10. Without the PE10 tool, we couldn't create these calculators. Without the PE10 tool, we could not evaluate stocks. We would not know when to change our stock allocations to invest effectively, to invest rationally. So that's why I say PE10 rocks. PE10 is the key to making rational investing work. And the hardest question, you know, the hardest hurdle I have to overcome in persuading people to adopt the rational investing approach is persuading people. It's a very strange thing. What I have to do is persuade people to do something that is, you know, very, very much in their self-interest. Everybody wants higher stock returns. Rational investing delivers higher stock returns at lower risk than passive investing. So you would think, you know, just describing this, you would think everyone's going to flock to rational investing, but it's not so. And the reason why it's sometimes a hard sell is it really sounds too good to be true. People look at it and they say, why doesn't, you know, maybe everything you're saying makes sense, but why doesn't everyone do this? You know, there must be a catch. It must not work. You know, everyone would be following this. Well, let's take John Bogle. John Bogle's one of the, you know, smartest investing experts in the world. I think that's, you know, a fair statement. It's a consensus view. It's not just Rob Bennett that says that. There are millions of people that say that. Okay? Well, and I, you know, I follow much of John Bogle's advice, like tuning out the noise, you know, things like that, keeping expenses low, investing for the long term, all that sort of thing. Bogle's a genius. But when you get to the question of passive investing, Bogle advocates passive investing. Bogle says don't change your stock allocation when prices get out of control. Why does he say that? What is he thinking? It makes no sense, right? The intuitive thing to do would be, when prices get out of control and stocks are dangerous, to lower your allocation a bit so that you don't get destroyed in the price drop. Why does Bogle advocate not doing that? You know, what would possess him? What possesses him is Bogle believes in passive investing. Passive investing is rooted in a belief that it's not possible to know when stocks are well-priced and when stocks are poorly priced. Passive investing is rooted in something called the efficient market theory, which says the market always prices stocks either properly or at least better than you can. There's no way to know better than the market what the true price of stocks should be. That's really what the efficient market theory says. So Bogle basically throws up his hands. Now, the efficient market theory has been discredited for 20 years now. There's lots and lots of academic research showing that it does not match reality. It's not a good model. It does not explain how stock investing works. So the passive investing model has been discredited as well. It's a poor model. But what a lot of investing experts are having a hard time with is they understand that, you know, they've read the literature. They know that there are problems with the passive investing school of thought, but they don't know what to replace it with. And the struggle they're having is if they just, you know, sometimes using common sense is the hardest thing in the world. If they just use their common sense, they would know what to do. What they would do is they'd say, we should be telling people to change their allocations based on the long-term value proposition. That's obviously the sensible way to go. The trouble with that is you have to have a tool that tells you when stocks offer a strong long-term value proposition, or else you can't do the common sense thing. And a lot of people, when they've checked it out, they've used PE1 instead of PE10, and they get unreliable numbers. They get numbers that don't really work. So what we need to do is we need to encourage more and more people to turn to PE10. There are more turning to PE10, but we need a lot more turning to it. And my hope is that as prices continue downward, as people continue to suffer financial losses as a result of buying into the passive model, which does not work, people will become more motivated, shall we say, to look for a better model, a model that does work, a model that's not discredited. And when they do that, we need to get the word out. You know, if they start testing the model using PE1, say, no, don't use PE1. That doesn't work. That's also discredited. You know, just like the passive investing model, PE1 is discredited. Use a valuation assessment tool that works. Use one that we've tested, that we've done research on, and that passes all the statistical tests. Use a valuation assessment tool that works. That's PE10. Use PE10 and it all works. You can go through the entire record of historical stock returns, and what you will see is when the PE10 number is high, bad long-term stock returns. When the PE10 level is low, amazing, mouth-watering long-term stock returns. When the PE10 level is moderate, when we're at fair value prices, the long-term value proposition is very strong indeed. Stocks usually offer a very strong value proposition, but you need to know when to pull back. And the only way that I know of to do that is to use an analytically valid valuation assessment tool. There are others. There are some people who are very informed about valuations that use other tools. Some use the Gordon equation. Some use something called Tobin's Q. There are different tools. But PE10 is the one that works best. Some of these other tools, there's a lot to be said for them, and I think it'd be helpful to have a debate, you know, among, you know, as to which valuation tool is best. And it may be that in some circumstances there are tools that are better than PE10. But from what I've learned, PE10 is the one that works best for the average investor in most circumstances. So all of the calculators at my site are built using the PE10 tool. I urge you to learn about it, and the best way to learn about it is just to experiment with the historical data. The easiest way to experiment with the historical data is to use the calculators at the website. You'll always be finding out what PE10 tells you about how to invest effectively, about how to make shifts in your stock allocation to obtain the best long-term return from your stock investment while taking on the least amount of risk. That's why PE10 rocks. PE10 gives you higher returns at lower risk. And that's what rational investors should be trying to obtain. Good luck with your investing strategies. Take care.